TheDigitalLifestyle.com presents The Media Centre Show, Show 111, Thursday, 21st June 2007. Centre Show with Old Networks. I'm Ian Dixon. This week on the show, Jessica Zahn from the eHome team at Microsoft joins me to talk about a forum on the green button and some of the common posts she got on there and the questions she got on there. And we'll be talking about TV setup, cable card and beta testing. And also find out why Jessica just ran 12 miles before we did the interview. I have email into the show, news items and forum posts of the week. So welcome everybody to the show. I'm going to go straight into email. This is from Mark. Hi Ian, firstly, great show and keep up the good work for the community. I'm writing you for some advice. I've owned my XP Media Center PC for about 6 months now and I'm able to use it as my primary dual tuner DVB-T viewing device. It's never been 100% reliable as there have been a few times when the TV signal has deteriorated, but nothing that couldn't be fixed by rescanning a couple of times. Recently, however, I've experienced some more serious signal dropouts, to the point that I have lost the signal on nearly all of my channels. Rescanning did not solve any of the problems, and even using Mark Soloway's useful MCE configuration reset tool and the MC tuner priority tool did not solve this issue. After using those tools, I can now receive BBC channels fine, but not much else. My questions are, have you experienced anything like this? How often do you lose signal on Media Centre and have to rescan? It seems whichever broadcast station I use, Crystal Palace, Oxford, etc., does not solve the issue. Secondly, do you or anyone in the community have a possible solution for this? As I mentioned earlier, I've tried the configuration reset tool, but wasn't brave enough to go ahead and do a full reset, including tuner reset. Might this make some difference? Finally, I've tried to think of any software I've recently installed that may cause these issues. The only software I've installed is the Theatertech DVD, a fantastic DVD player software, and I'm wondering if this may be causing video decoder issues. Would decoder issues affect the TV signal that Media Centre receives? Apologies for the long email, but I'm guessing others may have the same problem and might have a solution that they can share with the community. Many thanks, Mark. And thanks for the email, Mark. I've actually had something similar to this myself, and the signal problems are a real pain because they're really hard to put your finger on, and obviously it ruins any recordings that you've got set up. One problem I had really recently was I had the cable, my aerial cable, coming into the house, and it was split using a cable splitter to go up to my TV and then one across to the PC for the Media Centre. And I found that over a period of time the signal degraded until some channels were unwatchable, especially Channel 5 and ITV2, ITV4. I tried various solutions. I tried a powered splitter and booster to see if that would help, and it did help a little. But in the end, I ended up using the aerial cable out socket on my Sony TV so that I didn't need the splitter. So the aerial cable went into the TV, then an aerial cable went out of the TV into the Media Center PC, and that completely solved the problem. So I guess it was some signal issue caused by the aerial cable, and I wonder whether you've just got signal issues caused by aerial cables, and over a period of time they're getting worse, and it could be something to do with that. You mentioned about the Theatertech DVD software. You could try using the DVD decoder tool that Gary Whittaker wrote, and I'll include a link for that in the show notes. And basically you can set the decoder that Media Centre should use, so it should be using the Microsoft one and not the Theatertech one. I can't see that causing the problem. I can imagine that causing a problem across all channels, but not specifically for sort of weak signal channels like in my case the Channel 4 and the ITV4 type channels. So I would check out your cable, things like checking the ends of the cable. If you've had to put the connectors on yourself, make sure that they're all good, and it could be a signal type issue. I've mentioned it previously. I really wish there was some kind of a tool that would sit in the tray that would warn you when you've got signal issues, DVB-T signal issues, so that you'll get a pop-up to say, you know, you've got signal degradation and you know sorted out, rather than waiting to find out, you know, a couple of weeks later when your program you recorded hasn't recorded properly. So I'd be interested to see if anybody could come up with anything like that. And thanks for the email, Mark. And any listeners, please send in the any solutions you've got to ian@thedigitallifestyle.com and let us know how you get on, Mark. Now a few items from around the web. And Aaron Stebner's got a post linking to some new applications from OAB Software. And the first one was Media Center Outlook 1.0. This is a Media Center application for Vista Media Center that allows you to read email and view your calendar from Outlook, read notes, etc. And it gets the information directly out of Outlook and displays it with the Media Center, which is great. So if you're using Outlook on your machine, it works great to display your Outlook content on Media Center. And just point out that due to the way it works with user accounts, it's not going to work on extenders, and the extenders use their own user accounts, so that's not going to work. But a nice program, and if you're using Outlook, it's a good way to get that through Media Center. Next application is Media Center Mail 2.1. This is an updated application that supports Vista Media Center, allows you to read email within the Media Center interface, and it retrieves email from POP3 servers, and with 2.1 it's now possible to use it on a Media Center extender. Another application is Media Center Video Phone 2.1. This is a video phone application to allow you to have video conversations with Vista Media Center, and you can answer calls, etc. And it makes use of SIP, the Session Initialization Protocol, the kind of standard for voice over IP type calls. And again, that looks a nice piece of software. And finally, there's Media Center RSS Reader, which is 2.1, and this is an update of their Vista, and this is an update of their RSS reader for Vista, and you can read text feeds, podcasts, video blogs, those kind of things through Media Center, and it uses Internet Explorer's RSS store, and again this works on the extender. So it's good to see that developers are supporting Vista Media Center. I've not tried any applications myself, I can have a look at those, and there's a link in the show note to Aaron's post where he has some details of them. Now Ginsberg reports that there is a important fix for Australian DVB-T Vista Media Center users. There seems to be a localized problem of Media Center losing its channels lineup, which is, like I said, just affecting Australian users. And this fix apparently fixes that problem. Right, sounds a nasty problem, because at the moment the only way to get your channels back is to re-scan for the channels, and you don't want to keep doing that when you're waiting to record a program. So the fix sounds very necessary. I'd read Niall's post for more details if you're in Australia and a DVB-T user. In fact, on that subject, because I put it on the blog the other day, I got an email. It says, "Hi Ian, love the show. Is there a place I can download the hotfix from? I live in New Zealand and use analog tuners, but as one of my stations has disappeared, and I'm not sure if this is related, but it couldn't hurt to install the hotfix just in case." Well, thanks for the email, Mark. Actually, it's DVB only, which this is a digital video broadcasting standard, so it's not going to help with analog, so you don't want to install that. But thanks for the email. And Paul from MCE Components let me know he's updated his website. This is the website where you can upload your configuration of Media Center and report on how the components are working. So if you're building a new Media Center, you can check the hardware compatibility. And he posts on a lot of updates to the site, and you can do better searches and things. So have a look at that and make sure you get your config uploaded as well. There's a new version of DVR MS Toolbox out. We've had the developer of that on the show a few weeks ago, and there's quite a few changes and updates to that. So if you're a user of this tool and you can use it for commercial removal, use it for moving files around, changing file types, whatever, a really useful application, check out the link in the show notes to an update and have a look at that. Now, I mentioned last week I'm bringing back forum poster of the week, so I've done that, and this week's forum poster is Adrian Davis. He posted a thread on Windows Home Server and about the benefits of Windows Home Server, and there's a new build of Windows Home Server out, actually the release candidate, and I just got that installed last week, and that's working really well. And if you follow the guide on the forums about how to get that working with Media Center, there's a little batch file in there that you need, or that you needed to, for Windows Home Server to retain the settings, but I think that's fixed now, so you don't need that little batch file. So if you follow the guide, I'll include a link in the show notes, you'll be able to get that set up and share recorded TV with your home server and across your Media Center network. Adrian gets a copy of MC Phone and Pamela, the digital assistant for Skype, a little bundle for being forum poster of the week. And if you want to be in chat in with a chance of being forum poster of the week, I just draw them at random, so I'll just post on the forums on the digitallifestyle.com and I'll make sure you get included in the draw. The email address for the show is ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. I really do like getting your email. It's a great way of getting some feedback with the rest of the community, so please keep those coming in, and I really do like reading those out. Now it's time for a message from One Voice. I'll be back with Jessica Zahn.
Introducing Media Center Communicator, the perfect complement for Windows Media Center. Imagine walking into your home and simply speaking to play music, watch TV, read and send email, call to order pizza, and more. Now with Media Center Communicator, you have full control of your digital home using only your voice. And best of all, there is no voice training required. And built on OneVoice's Media Center Communicator, MC Each Speech Tools is a powerful speech recognition toolkit allowing developers of Media Center compatible applications to easily incorporate speech recognition commands as features. OneVoice offers licenses for MCE Speech Tools along with its Media Center Communicator to the rapidly growing community of Media Center developers. Just say it to play it. To learn more, go to www.onev.com.
Jessica, welcome to the Media Center Show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm really pleased to get you on the show because of your fantastically popular Ask Jessica forum on the green button, where there's just post after post, and I don't know how you get through all those and manage to answer all those. It's really impressive. But before we dive into that, first let's get a bit of background on you and what your role is at Microsoft.
Okay. I've worked for Microsoft for a bit more than 6 years, and about, I think, 3 of those years has been on the Media Center team, specifically focused on TV. When I first joined this team, I had a role as a project manager for our Emerald and Diamond releases, which were Media Center 2005 Roll-Up 2, and then our Vista release. But during the Vista release, I changed roles to become a feature PM in the area of settings and first run for TV. So basically TV setup.
Right. So what's a feature PM then?
Well, instead of being in a project management role, which would be looking more team-wide, getting the team to move towards deadlines and, you know, having them complete their action items at different points in a project, it's more of a deeper vertical role where I own all of TV setup and I have to figure out how it's supposed to work and where, what features I'm going to create in the future, where it's going to go, things like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
One is a very broad role and one's a very narrow and vertical, deeper role.
The TV setup feature is such a wide area that I guess, you know, that it's the initial thing that a lot of people see when they first go through Media Center. So I suppose it's one that has a huge amount of features that you've got to kind of narrow down to make very simple as the initial experience for someone using Media Center.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty hard problem because what we would like is for everyone to be able to get through TV setup extremely easily. But when you think about all the TV signals worldwide and different configurations, different tuners, you know, all the different components that have to come together to make TV happen on your Media Center, it's actually pretty complex. But what we want to do is make it as simple as possible for end users to be able to just very quickly, you know, tell us a little bit of information and, you know, move on and be able to actually use the product. We don't like that we block people from using TV until TV is set up. So we want to make setup as simple as possible.
So I suppose that's, you know, in the Vista version compared to the XP version, that you get that initial sort of express or screen where you can pick just to sort of dive straight into Media Center or set up TV or leave it till later. I quite like that idea that it gives you that immediate access without going through the setup, but you know you can pick it up later.
Yes, that's exactly the point of express setup. Although I have to say, that the way that our teams are divided here at Microsoft, a different team owns that part of setup. I own specifically TV setup, which is different from the overall media center setup. Does that make sense? It doesn't make sense to a user probably, but it's organizationally how we're divided.
One of the things that I noticed when I was doing the research for my media center book was that the TV setup for the different signals, is totally different, but it kind of leads you through step by step in a similar way. And that must be really difficult to accommodate, say, something like a DVB-T signal as opposed to analog capture card, but make it feel like it's all part of the same system.
Well, and actually what we want to do is be able to reuse as much code as possible. And if you set up today DVB-T and ATSC in the U.S., they are both digital terrestrial TV signals, but you'll see that it is different, and we don't like that because there are elements to what we do in DVB-T and elements to what we do in ATSC that the other signal would want, or users of the other signal type would want. So one of the things that I'm trying to do is move towards more modular code that can be applied to different TV signals, as long as they have similar properties. Even though DVB-T and ATSC are not the same, they're both digital terrestrial, and they should both be able to display signal strengths, for example, in Media Center, and today we can only do that for ATSC.
Right, I see, yeah, because one of the things I noticed when you go through the setup is that you get asked a couple of questions about, where's your postcode, and then which transmitter you want to use, but it doesn't really give you a clue to say, well, actually, this might be a better transmitter for you, and, those are the kind of things we like to see in future versions.
Yeah, I've definitely heard that feature request before.
But the TV setup experience, even in the XP version, was painless, but in the Vista version it seems a lot quicker, certainly on the digital side where it scans for the channels. It seems to get through those much quicker now than it did on XP in the same machine with just changed by, upgrading the Windows.
Well, that is great to hear that it's faster.
There must be it's difficult to incorporate all the different formats as they come through new formats and how you build that in. So is that what, going back to what you're saying about that modular approach?
Yeah, especially when we start thinking about new formats that we want to include. We've heard from end users that they want support for DVB-S. We've heard that they want support for QAM in the U.S. So as we start adding more and more, you can add them in sort of a hacky way, a one-off, let's do a QAM module, let's do a DVB-S module, or you can do it in such a way where code can be shared and where we can develop a product that will work for other TV signals that we don't currently plan to support, or that we don't support today, or that aren't on our roadmap for until years from now.
Yeah, so if you kind of build a modular approach where if there's a new standard comes out, you can drop that module in and the rest of Media Center can work with it. I suppose a bit like almost like a .NET programming where you can drop your .NET assemblies in and all the programs, assemblies can use those without specifically having to understand everything that component implements.
Yeah, and where different pieces can be applied to different TV signals. So if we need to do, for example, we have for Ocher, the digital cable product, a special product identification key that needs to be entered in. If we do that module in a generic way, if we needed to do it for a different TV signal type or tuner type, we could apply that and not have, just have better development and an easier flow for first run. But ultimately, what I really want to see is TV first run or TV setup to be almost in the background. Like, if there was nothing a user had to tell us, that would be ideal for me. If I could just detect everything, detect all their channels, give them a perfect guide if a guide's available in their region, and, let them start using TV immediately. That's kind of my dream.
Yeah, and I suppose, yeah, that would be nice to see. It would certainly help new users to not get faced by these, questions as you're going through the setup, because experienced users will know, I know, that's the best way of doing that. But for a new user, it's all totally new to them, and it would be better if it could just, like you said, just populate as you're using Media Center, all these, channels and content and guide and everything's available.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, since the Vista Edition has launched, you've added the cable card support. That's the big news feature, isn't it? That's the thing that everybody wants. How much impact did that have on the development of the TV interface for Vista, or the TV development for Vista?
In general, for the entire team?
Yeah, yeah, it must have been it's a big feature, isn't it?
It is, and it crosses most of our feature teams. So the way that we divide, I own TV setup, someone else owns PVR, but a feature like digital cable crosses many, many people's areas. So it's from capture, getting the TV signal in and all the way through to our playback team and then our PVR team. So everyone sort of has a piece of this work. It was huge. We started it quite some time ago. We were working on it for more than 2 years, probably more like three.
And then in the first run experience, what's that sort of what's the user experience that you get with that? Is it similar to a sort of a DVB-T or a digital ATSC type experience, or is it more like sort of your set-top box experience?
Neither, actually. So if you have a digital cable device with a cable card, we get all of the information that we need to help you tune to channels through that cable card. So we have some UI that in TV setup that allows you to look at what we call pairing information and table information. You're basically information that the cable company is sending to your device. And you may need to call to be on that page in TV setup and call your cable company and say, okay, here's what I see. Make sure that we're connected so that we're, talking to the cable company properly. The device is receiving the information that it requires. So that's in TV setup, a whole module that's really just dedicated to digital cable. And probably is the sort of thing that would only be applicable for other cable systems that use the cable card protocol.
Yeah. How are you finding the uptake on cable card? Are these devices starting to get out into the market now?
Well, it's really early. I've heard of some shipping, and I've heard of some people having difficulty with getting things set up properly. It is sort of this dance we have to do with the cable companies. Our device has to receive the right information at the right time, and the cable companies have to send it. It's a new technology for cable companies, and they typically don't have a lot of experience with it because they don't use cable cards in their own set-top boxes today. So the only place where they've been using these is with cable card televisions. And there just aren't that many of them out there. So, to have this new device that a lot of technicians are not familiar with, when we did our beta testing, we tried to get a wide distribution, across the country of digital cable testers so we could give them the devices and we could see what other cable companies besides what we have here in Redmond are doing, because there's a published standard for how you use cable card, but that doesn't necessarily mean that every cable company is doing things in exactly the same way. So, I think it's a bit of a bumpy start. In general, I think it's a great product. I'm using it at home, I'm using it at work, and, I love getting, high def cable on without an antenna, on my television.
Well, I saw it at CES, and the picture quality looked great, and everything was nice and seamless. And I think that's probably the big advantage, isn't it, that you've not got to hook up IR blasters or any other kind of sort of special cables or anything. It just just all connects together and it works out of the box.
Right. Well, hopefully. And with a set-top box, you don't get native digital cable. You don't get HD quality. So this is the only way besides ATSC or DVB-T, besides terrestrial signals today, to get, your high-definition television into Media Center.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly looks, for U.S. Users, it certainly looks the way forward. And I guess it's just getting the cable companies and everybody used to the standard as it rolls out.
Yeah, supposedly... Now I can't remember the date. It's either June 1st or July 1st. Cable companies are required to start using cable cards in their own set-top box products. So we may see an improvement there in the implementation on the cable company side of the technology.
It is a sort of great feature, and it's one of those things that everybody asks for Media Center, and it's great that Vista is able to deliver that functionality.
Yeah, we're really excited to release it.
Now, you mentioned something about beta testing. We saw the sign-up for beta testers for media centers. So first of all, in case anybody's not really sure what we're talking about, what is beta testing? Beta testing, as you would say.
Well, when we get ready to do a new release, we set up a series of end users from across the world, really across the United States, and a distribution in all of the countries that we ship significant numbers of media centers in. And we find end users, and basically what we'll do is either give them hardware, it depends on what they already have, or just give them test versions of our software and request that they install these builds, run them at home with their normal scenarios. We often provide a list of scenarios, like, for example, this week we'd like you to focus on recording television. So can you record two shows at the same time? Can you record shows back to back? Things like that. And we ask users to file bugs when they see them and to fill out surveys and tell us how they think the performance is, how they feel the quality is, so sort of that qualitative information about our product and what they think of our new features. I was asked to post that in the Ask Jessica forum by our beta team. They're just getting ready to start soliciting new testers, and the response was incredible. In the first week, I think we had about 10,000 people apply. So I haven't checked recently to see what the numbers are, but it's crazy. Yeah. And now if you search for my name and Media Center, you know, on the internet, you find, you know, hundreds of hits, which is kind of freaky.
I mean, so you were surprised by the response. Why do you think there was such a strong response to the call for beta testers?
You know, Vista has digital cable, and that's wonderful. And we have our new UI, but there weren't a ton of new features that really got users excited about Media Center. So I think that people are really looking towards future releases of Media Center to see new innovative things that maybe they haven't seen as much of in the past couple of releases. We've done a lot of infrastructure work. We've really prepared to do some really cool things. But I get it when people say, you haven't shown me something that blew me away and that nobody else is doing, and, you know, that I can't get anywhere else at this point. So I think that people want to see what we're up to. Unfortunately, beta testers aren't allowed to talk about it, and nor am I. And I also can't really talk about what kind of timing we're looking at. I can say that we're in the very early stages.
Yeah, what makes a good beta tester?
You know, it's a big commitment. It takes a lot of time to beta test. I think someone on the green button posted in my forum that you have to have like 8 hours a week or so to dedicate to it. And I'm not sure about that. But installing a build takes time. You have to be able to be willing to lose recordings if that's your only media center, because you're going to be running new code that may not work all the time. That's why it's a beta and not a released version. And you have to have time to fill out surveys and bug reports. And when we get bug reports, we also give you, the beta testers, a set of tools where they can basically run these tools to collect logs and other information for us so that we have some data to use to figure out what the problem is. So, you know, it's a big commitment. It's not just, you know, the cool part where you get to see, you know, yay, look at these cool new features I get to use. Oh, look, Media Center crashed again, you know, because it will. I have to say, when I start bringing home early builds, I get this look from my husband. You know, he starts rolling his eyes and saying, oh, am I going to not be able to watch TV again? Sometimes that's what happens.
Yeah, so a beta tester needs to be willing to put the system, you know, to be on the bleeding edge of technology, really, when they're doing these tests. And also, it's the feedback, I guess, that's the key, isn't it, for Microsoft?
Yes. So it's fine if the beta tester installs all the builds and tries to use our products, but if we don't get significant feedback from the beta tester, it wasn't useful for us. And that's really why we do this, to get end-user feedback, which could be bug reports, it could be feature requests, and it could just be opinion, like, you know, maybe you should think about doing it this way. Or we learned things like, when I went through this experience, I thought it was going to do X, but it actually did Y. And, you know, that may not be what we expected users to do. And we learn you know, usability issues from that.
Yeah, I suppose that's the thing when you put it out to sort of your non-Microsoft people, is that you kind of all know the product and got used to it, so when something does something, you just accept that. But when you throw it out there to perhaps new or to users that are using it sort of not, haven't come from the development side, you know, they put their own take on it, and you need that feedback to sort of make it a more rounded product.
Well, and that's what I love about interacting with end users. They don't know about our technologies, our limitations, the politics here, any of that stuff, right? All they know is, as a user, I want to see features that look like this. Why can't you do this? And it's really easy when you work here for a long time to get into this, you know, oh, we can't do that, no one will ever let us do that, that takes up too many resources, there's no business case or whatever it is. And then we hear from end users, like, here's what we want to see. We don't care about the limitations of, you know, the underlying technology. You know, figure out how to do it, Microsoft, and get it done. And I love that kind of feedback. It's refreshing.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you're selecting the beta testers, you mentioned, so you've got some 10, well, probably over 10,000 by now. How can you then go about picking which testers you're going to actually select out of that huge number?
Well, we know how many we need from each country to get a reasonable set. And we know that based on experience, right? So we know that if we have, say, 20 testers chosen, probably we're only going to get really good feedback out of about half of them. You know, they're all going to go into it wanting to do the best that they can, of course. But, you know, we know from experience that maybe 50% or some, I don't know what the actual number is, are going to give us good feedback. So then we need to figure out what is the distribution of TV signals. So if we have room for 100 testers in the UK, how many DVB-T do we need? How many PAL do we need? How many PAL with set-top box do we need? And we start looking that way. And then we look at, obviously if someone says that they rarely watch TV, we don't want them to be a TV tester. You know, that makes sense. I don't actually think that we care if they're current Media Center users or not. Probably we want them to be familiar with some kind of PBR device and understand how it works. But in general, when you start taking all of these sort of filters and we have this many spots and we're going to do, you know, whatever percentage for DVB-T and this new TV signal type or whatever, then you really narrow down what the pool is. And we also keep on beta testers from previous releases. So if you were a good tester on a previous release, we want you again. So it just narrows down the number that of spots that are available for any given release.
I don't know that you can talk numbers, but in a general beta like the upcoming Media Center beta, what kind of numbers do you have to do the beta testing?
I really can't get specific about that. I can say that it's, what we'll be allowed to do by, you know, Microsoft's rules is probably a lot less than what we would like to be able to do. You have to balance it, because the more people that you tell what you're doing, the more people that know and therefore can, you know, leak secrets. Because beta testing is secret, right? I mean, these are unreleased features, and we want to be able to make a marketing splash at some point that says, look at these cool new things that this product can do. And if the whole world already knows, we don't get, you know, all that bang that we would like to have.
Yeah.
And I guess that's sort of why I'm happy to be on the green button now, hearing feature requests, because I do pass them along to everyone, that every feature PM for whom I've heard a request in their area. And that's one of the ways that's actually a better way, I think, to get feature requests to us than through the beta testing, because for beta testing, we're really focused on that release. And by the time we release a beta, we know generally what features we want to fit into a release. Not every feature that we want to fit in is going to, and there might be things that come in later, but typically we have a reasonable understanding of the feature set by the time we actually release a beta build. And, you know, if you just submit feature requests any old time, we have a database where we keep feature requests, and then PMs, program managers like me, keep lists of what people want to see.
Yeah. Let's talk about the forum you've got now there. It's an immensely popular forum. Are you surprised by the amount of posts that you've got on there now?
Yeah, know, when I said I would do it, I really didn't think what it was going to be like. I actually had offered to Daniel Sterling, who's the administrator of the Green Button, to write a blog where people asked me questions and I answered them. And it was his suggestion that I do a forum like this, and then I was sort of like, oh, that could get really crazy because I could have to answer hundreds of posts. And that's sort of true. It's pretty tough for me Monday mornings if I haven't checked over the weekend and I come in and there's like 20 new threads that I want to respond to. So I guess I'm not surprised that it's popular. It's a very, like, the Green Button is hugely popular, right? And this is the first time that someone from Microsoft has been really overt about, I'm here on the Green Button for you guys to, you know, talk to. There are other people. There certainly have been others before me. But I think that just having it say, Ask Jessica, the Green Button exclusive, or whatever it says, is just very, you know, it's very overt.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that you get a whole range of questions as well, ranging from, you know, why doesn't it do feature X? When you're going to do this, right down to, I recorded my show last night and it crashed, you know, why?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So when it seems like it's a bug question, like why did something happen or something went wrong, then I do my best to get an answer, either because I know the answer or because I can find the people around here who would know. That's not really the right way to get support from Microsoft. You know, we do have formal channels. But I think that as long as people on my team have the time to, you know, dash off an email to me that says, oh, yeah, it sounds like this could be the problem, then I think that it's a nice service, not one that, you know, we're going to promise we provide to end users, but that we're going to try to do. I love engaging with end users about feature requests. Like, why do you want that? How would that work? What does that look like to you? What does it mean? You know, that sort of thing, I think, is really valuable and really helps us in shaping future releases of Media Center. When I get the questions about, like, you know, when is Media Center going to support QAM or DVBS or whatever it is, you know, usually I just can't answer those things, but I can also turn it around and say, well, tell me why you want it, tell me what it would look like, you know, let's talk about these things. And then sometimes we find really significant issues that we need to address, and I think one of those is my TV is failing to record and saying restricted content, and that's something that we had heard a few times, you know, here and there, sort of sporadically, but to have a thread that has 10,000 views, yesterday it did, and to have a whole bunch of people reporting this issue, it, you know, gives us an awareness into it that we didn't have before. And I can tell you that things are changing around here, that things are moving because of the information that end users are providing directly to me.
Yeah, so I suppose, like, if you're getting, you know, thousands of hits on it, and then you're getting sort of hundreds of replies and whatever, you're getting a good cross-section of what the of who the error is occurring to and what circumstances. It really does narrow down, whereas opposed, if you had those spread over different, you know, different forums and different areas, then you perhaps wouldn't see the same patterns emerging.
Right. I mean, this is, like, I actually just asked yesterday for people to post a private message to me that says what cable company they have, what shows aren't recording, how often, what channels, and that sort of thing. So because I'm aggregating that for our policy team and the technology team that owns the implementation of that content protection. And, you know, and I really do believe that something will change as a result. I can't promise what or when, but I know the right people care, and it's because end users told me about it.
Right, yeah. And you, I think it's also good from the user's point of view to know that, you know, they're not just getting these errors and no one's listening. There are people taking, you know, taking their feedback and you know, talking about it internally within Microsoft. And it does feel as though you haven't got this error and you're just sort of hitting your head against a brick wall, and that, you know, it's just not going to work. That's the end of it. You feel like you know at least someone's listening to you.
Yeah, it's tough because a lot of the people on the Green Button are trying things that aren't really end user scenarios. You know, every time I see someone post something about, oh, I wanted to replace the Microsoft decoder with blah, blah, blah in Vista. And I'm thinking, okay, don't ask me about that because the only decoder we support is the Microsoft one. So I'm not going to be able to answer you about this kind of, you know, hack or workaround or whatever it is that, you know, you're trying to do. I would like to know why it is that you feel the Microsoft one doesn't, like, what doesn't it do that you need it to do? Because that's a feature request and that's a really valid thing to tell us about. But I probably can't help with hacks and workarounds. Like, that wouldn't be appropriate for my position.
Mm. I mean, looking at the forum, there's I think, like you said, there's well over 10 pages on there now. What are the sort of common questions that you've been answering, or certainly you've been asked?
There's a lot of questions about when are we going to do X. So I've talked about QAM a couple of times in this conversation because there are a bunch of users on my forum that tell me all the time how much they want QAM, which is in the clear digital cable. So it's unencrypted. It's basically the same channels that you can get through ATSC, except that if you get them through your cable, then it's not subject to, you know, your antenna moving around because of weather or whatever. And to that, you know, I get why they want it. I like to talk to end users for that case about what we do when channels move around. Not all cable companies have the same implementation in terms of whether we have data in the stream to tell us what channels are on what frequencies. So that it's a difficult problem to solve, and I know how my television, I have a television that's capable of QAM, I know how that works, but I like to hear how other people's devices and how other devices work, so it's nice to engage with users that way. Another question that people ask all the time is about V2 extenders. When are they going to be available? What features are they going to have? And when we talk about that, there's very little we can say, mostly because it's not public yet. We're working, obviously, with outside companies to create these things, so we can't give away their secrets. But it's great to hear the list of what people actually want to see in V2 extenders. And I think I started a thread very early on about what people wanted in V2 extenders, and that got passed around to everyone, up to the VPs over here for Media Center. So a lot of people saw, you know, raw end-user feedback on the green button, which is, I think, wonderful.
Yeah, I suppose the good thing about that is, well, it's not coming from focus groups or marketing, you know, surveys and whatever. It's just coming from real users.
Well, the focus groups and marketing include real users, right? I mean, this is just another set of end users, and probably our biggest enthusiasts are on the green button. So I think a lot about, you know, I want, when I'm designing my features, we have personas that we're designing these features for. You know, I have sort of an idea in my head of who the target audience is. And I also think about, and what are the enthusiasts on the green button going to think of this? What kinds of things are they going to want? What are advanced users going to want? Is it possible for me to create those implementations?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, I want to do things in a simple way, but I understand that there are a lot of people out there who want more complex options.
Yeah, I guess a majority of the regular Green Button Forum members are going to be real enthusiasts, whereas I guess, you know, obviously Media Center is a product for a broad range of people and not just for the sort of the hardcore enthusiasts.
Right. At the same time, the green button is where probably everyone ends up when they have a Media Center problem. I know that for me, before I worked on this team and I had a Media Center at home, even though I worked for Microsoft and knew about Microsoft support and Microsoft news groups, I used the green button when I had issues, when I was, you know, just starting out, just setting up my machine for the first time. So I feel like, you know, people, like, I always use my mother as an example. If my mother had a Media Center, and she doesn't because she lives 3,000 miles from me, so I haven't been able to set her up yet, but someday, actually, she has a Media Center PC. She doesn't have a TV tuner. So someday when I get out there and I set her up, I believe that when she has a problem, she'll probably, you know, search on some website, and she'll end up at the green button, and, you know, I hope that she either finds me or finds help from the rest of the community.
Yeah, because the community is always really great. That's one thing I like about the Media Centre community, and being part of that, is that they are really helpful with each other. It's a really nice sort of friendly group of people.
On the Green Mountain, yeah.
The whole Media Centre community, I think, is a really great community.
Yeah, one of the things that I worried a little bit about with putting myself out there was that I was going to get a lot of the, hey, Microsoft, you suck because whatever. And, you know, I can take that. You can tell that to me if you want to, and I'll listen to you, probably pretty politely if I can handle it. But I really haven't seen that. I haven't seen people be rude. I think that everyone has been really appreciative that I've been, that I'm there. And in, you know, the response to the community to me has been so nice that it's actually encouraged other coworkers of mine to get on there. So Ian Kennedy has been on there for a long time, but he's been active and he helps me with the really hard playback questions. And then recently, Phil Lowe and Janelle Coberly, and Phil's on my team and he works in playback, and Janelle is on the extender team. And then Noah Spitzer Williams from the music team have all gotten on and started answering end user questions. And that's really, you know, a testimony, I think, to how welcoming the community is.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really good. And it is good to, you know, to see on there that, you know, you've not got people just, why don't you do this? You know, like you said, you suck, you don't support Feature X. It's, you know, that's not really very productive. But I think the Green Button is a kind of place that doesn't draw in those kind of people anyway. To be honest, you don't really see a great deal. I don't get comments on my blogs or through the show forums or email, you know, much like that either.
They're certainly out there. I've seen them. But they're fortunately not directed at individuals, so that's good. But I wouldn't care so much if someone said, you suck because you don't do. Like, I want to hear what people have to say, and I don't mind hearing their frustrations when they find bugs that we didn't fix for whatever reason. And I think it gives me as a program manager good perspective. One of the things I have to do towards the end of a product release is we have bugs, right? We always have bugs. And at some point we can fix almost every bug. And then as we get closer to our release date, the amount of bugs we can fix goes down because we have to stabilize the code, and every code change can potentially introduce new bugs. So while we're doing this locking down process, the bar for what bugs we're going to fix gets higher and higher. And when I hear from end users about, especially about bugs that I knew about at the very end when they didn't meet the end bar, right? They weren't severe enough to stop shipping a Vista, for example. But I hear from end users about their pain. It gives me a better perspective from which to triage when I have to go and look at those bugs and decide what we're going to try to fix and what we're going to push. At some point, I have to push them through not just my team, but through a whole bunch of layers of management to get anything done when you're locking down at the very end of a project. And it just helps to just know, you know, what are users actually going to say? How are they going to feel? Or how did they feel with previous bugs that we, you know, let go in the product that we didn't fix?
I think it's the whole thing, isn't it, is just about getting the communication. And wherever you get the sort of the lines of communication like this, it improves the product, but it also improves the perception of Microsoft as not just being a faceless organization. It's like we've mentioned on the show in the past about, you know, the Media Center bloggers, that you've got real people that are working on the product, and it's not just a giant corporation with faceless corporation.
Yes, and that's why I wanted the forum to have my name attached to it and not just Ask Microsoft and then have sort of a generic, you know, whoever or fake name or whatever. Like, there's really a Jessica Zahn, that's really me, and a bunch of the MVPs met me, so they actually know I exist. But I think that it is important to let people know that we're real people and we have personalities and we really do care. We do work sort of in this big machine of a large company, but there are lots of things that you'll see in future releases of Media Center that will be results of working with end users on what they want to see in our product. I really believe that.
That is, you know, it's a really good thing about work, you know, with a product like Media Center, is that you know that you put your feedback in and someone's listening. I think that's, you know, that's a really nice way of, you know, working with the product, is you take all these different, you're not just going for the sort of top line features, but you're hearing what people are saying.
Yeah, and there's so much out there. Like, this is such an area that people are passionate about, you know, TV and music and movies, and you know, they have a lot to say about how they want to consume that kind of entertainment. So, and sometimes it's a little overwhelming. There's so much out there about it, and not just our product, but about competing products. But I think that's, you know, just so important for program managers and others on our team to really, you know, get involved with communities and really understand what users are finding, like, in other products that they like, and what they expect from us in the future.
So just remind us then, where's the place to go if you want to ask you a question?
If you want to ask me a question, you can go to the green button and go to the Ask Jessica forum. You can post TV questions for me. If you post non-TV questions, there are other Media Center employees who will help answer them. And if not, I forward them on to my coworkers who are not on the green button yet and ask them to answer. I cannot promise an answer to every single question. I try to at least acknowledge every thread, but some things I just won't be able to answer at all, and other things, you know, I just might not know and might not get an answer back. You know, anything that we do, like, our team is not support and our team is not sustained engineering. We are a product development team. So my primary responsibility and that of all of my coworkers is to be working on future versions of Media Center, to be pushing, you know, new features and, you know, doing software development, really, not software maintenance. We do have teams for that, I promise, but that's not our primary thing. So what time we spend in community is time that we're not spending, you know, doing our primary responsibility. So it comes second, I'll admit it. It comes second after product development. That's our primary job. And I think probably most people would appreciate that, because I think that if we talked about features all day long but never actually got any done, they wouldn't be very happy with us. So there's some balance that we need to strike there.
Yeah, absolutely. So you got to deliver them. So like you said, it's okay talking about all these various features, but at the end of the day, you've got to deliver and support them.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, it's a great idea. I think the communication's fantastic, and you know, so I encourage anybody to head over to the forum, and I'll include a link in the show notes directly to the forum to take anybody to it.
Cool. Thank you.
Now, before we go, just before we started recording this morning, you were saying that you'd done a run before you got to the office this morning, but it was really amazing. Just tell the listeners how far you ran this morning before you started work.
So I'm a little bit crazy, and I'm training for an Ironman, which is a 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike, and a full marathon, 26.2 miles running, all in one day, all back-to-back. You have to do it in under 17 hours. And my Ironman will be August 26th of this year up in Canada. And so this morning, I got up at 4:30 and met up with my girlfriends at 5 a.m., and we ran for a little over 2 hours. We ran about 12 miles, or I think 12 and a half miles total. And then I came to work. And I do that nearly every day. I work out for 2 to 3 hours before I show up at the office and do all my green button stuff first thing in the morning, and then actually work on some software development.
So you must have done it like a full day before you get your first coffee.
It feels that way. Well, no, my first coffee is in the car on the way. My second coffee is, I work out for a full day before my second coffee. And then I actually have two little children, so I go home and do my third job as parent.
Oh, and that's a big enough job for anybody. So it's an incredible training regime. So what made you decide to do this?
Honestly, so Microsoft has this obesity management benefit, and I was overweight my whole life, and Microsoft paid for me, or paid, you know, a significant amount for me to do this weight loss program, and the weight loss program turned me into this crazy triathlete, And, you know, I don't know, it just changed my whole life. So I became very athletic and, you know, just decided that the Ironman sounds like this humongous, impossible challenge, and I want to see if I can do it. And actually, at this point, I'm feeling pretty confident that I can do it.
Well, I mean, it sounds an amazing achievement, and a huge amount of training you need to go in to do something like that. It's incredible.
Yeah, but it's fun. And you know what? When you exercise like that, it relieves a lot of stress.
So all the flaming posts that you get on the green button are actually could help you to get a bit more training done.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, I'm frustrated. I'm going to go out for a run.
So really, you need to any posters, tell them not to go too easy on you, because it's all for your own benefit anyway.
Oh, yes, absolutely. They don't have to go easy on me anyway. I can take it. I'm pretty tough.
So that's August 26th that you're doing that?
It is.
Fantastic. Well, you'll have to let us know how you get on with that. It sounds an amazing thing to do, and good luck for that.
Thank you.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you today, and I better let you go back to doing some product development.
Thank you, and I will.
All right, many thanks for your time today.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks to Jessica. Please keep the email coming in, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. If you have any suggestions, comments, thoughts, send those in. If you want to send in a new item that should be talking about on the show, send those in as well. Or you can post on the forums at thedigitallifestyle.com. If you've got a media centre problem that you want to see if any listeners can help out, you can send that in as well. So it's ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. Don't forget the final week of the competition as well to win a copy of my book and a load of big pack of goodies. Check out the previous show for the details on that. And all you have to do is send me an email, ian@thedigitallifestyle.com. You know what your favourite feature of Media Centre is and what country you're in, and I'll include you in the draw for that. Okay, so that's me done. I'll see you next week. See you on the forums. Thanks for listening. Bye.